Blog Talk Radio.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Temet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization. And they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us, so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors, because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization, and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent. Leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diaspora, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that describes them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born, for they are the ones that you must teach, and you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, but they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pull our nation. Ashe, Ashe, Asheo.
Listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank, and they are operating on the Block Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening. 6 o'clock, Warriors Way Radio, continuing the fight.
Ms. Blackwell, I'm seeing something on my screen. It says losing connection, trying to reconnect. So if you could just stand by.
Yes.
Okay, Ms. Blackwell, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, all right. It just came back on for me, so okay. One more clip and we'll get started.
As hard as people think it is. Like, it's really good and really beneficial.
August is National Breastfeeding Month, and this week is Black Breastfeeding Week. Black children are less likely to be breastfed than other races, and moms in our area are working to educate others on the benefits of breastfeeding. 10 News reporter Shannon Smith introduces us to one of those advocating moms.
This is Lynette Harris.
I have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old.
She loves her boys and loved breastfeeding them. Harris saw the benefits with her first son.
He never really got sick, and he was always, like, happy, and, like, it was really good for him.
She's still breastfeeding her 1-year-old, but a lot of people question her feeding choice.
Apparently a lot of people of color don't believe in breastfeeding, and I didn't know that.
It's movements like Black Breastfeeding Week that are working to make it normal. The event started 8 years ago to try to encourage more black women to breastfeed.
Like, people just think it's so gross and over-sexualize it, and they think it's just like... It's just weird. People just think it's weird. I just think it's normal.
The CDC reports 74% of black babies are breastfed for some amount of time, compared to 87% of white babies. There's historical factors that play in. Black slaves would be forced to breastfeed their white owners' children instead of their own. That plays into this year's Black Breastfeeding Week theme, Revive, Restore, Reclaim.
Oh, wow. I like that. I think it means, like, bringing it back for our people, you know, because, like, make it more normal for us.
Harris says lack of education is holding women back. She said resources through WIC and the Pregnancy Resource Center made her successful at breastfeeding.
I think they just don't know they're there.
Now Harris is an advocate for breastfeeding.
That it's not as hard as people think it is. Like, it's really good and really beneficial.
I'm Shannon Smith reporting.
Black Breastfeeding Week founders say encouraging breastfeeding will help lower the black infant mortality rate and rate of diet-related diseases. We do have links and phone numbers for breastfeeding resources on our website, WBIR.com.
All right, welcome to Warrior's Way, continuing the fight. We are going to be talking about breastfeeding. Titled Breastfeeding or Formula, your thoughts, what's best, the advantages, disadvantages, and we're going to be joined with Davry Blackwell. She's with the African American Breastfeeding Network, and so she's going to be here a lot, and I have some other callers that's going to show up later and give their input as well. Ms. Blackwell?
Yes, I'm here. You sound a little choppy, but I'm present. I heard what you said. Thank you for inviting me. My name is Dalvery Blackwell. I live in the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I co-founded the African American Breastfeeding Network 13 years ago. I am a lactation consultant and just glad to be here today.
Now, when you say lactation consultant, that does what?
Oh, I said
that I'm a lactation consultant.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could elaborate on that.
Okay, I have training and expertise in supporting mothers and understanding lactation challenges and barriers and how to problem solve with families around how to have a good breastfeeding experience and how to overcome some of those challenges. So I am certified, meaning that I had to go through training and test and to be scored, and so I am a certified lactation consultant.
Okay, you know, this topic kind of came up. Some people had mentioned some things. There was a big thing on Facebook, and they were talking about the shortage with, formula, and a lot of people were wondering what they should do, and you had kind of different concerns here and there and stuff like that. And is there advantages or disadvantages from breastfeeding and formula? And I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't. That's just not my area of specialty.
Yeah, so we know that there has always been acknowledged the risk of formula feeding. But I do feel like now, because of the formula crisis, it's, I don't feel that now is the time to talk about the risk of formula feeding, but to talk about the risk of not being well informed, consulting with your physician, the risk of diluting whatever formula you have, the risk of making your own formula. And so I just want to shed light on this issue. The formula crisis, actually, we live in a, because of the COVID-19, we live in a shortage crisis for any product. Many of us on the call, for example, cannot get purchase a certain refrigerator or cannot get certain tools because of the pandemic and labor shortage, and the inability of America to make certain parts. We live in a shortage crisis in general. The baby formula industry was already coping with these issues before Abbott Nutrition, the factory in Michigan, shut down. And the company shut down its factory because four babies, all of whom had drunk formula made in the manufacturing plant, they had contracted a rare bacteria infection, right? And two of the babies, unfortunately, died. Yeah, they died. So it remains unclear why the babies died. But for that reason, Abbott had to close down and shut down and advise everyone to throw out the formula that they were making. There's three companies. One is Abbott. The other is Gerber. And the third one is Reddick. Nearly all of the formula in America is made by Abbott. It is the largest of the three with 40% of the market share. I do not think that the dialogue should be back. Excuse me. I do not think that we should be criticizing families who have decided to formula feed, right? I would say that our conversation will be, how do we promote breastfeeding, how do we educate the community and family, and also advocate for legislation.
Well, I thank you for that, because you're educating me on that, because I don't know, I don't have that understanding in regards to that, and, you know, and I have a cousin, she works for the delivery unit at Freighter. And she was telling me that some women, you know, they have problems with breastfeeding and where they get breast milk from other people and so forth, and for other all kinds of reasons. And so, you're absolutely right. We're not trying to or anybody that uses formula. It's just, you know, their choice, you know, and that's okay. But I did hear, and I quoted something that I had saw in the news clipping, and somebody told me it was old, and I posted it on Facebook. It said that 76% of black women breastfeed, whereas 87% of white women breastfeed. And then somebody came back and replied and said, no, it's a lot lower than that for black women. And why is that? I mean, I know you just talked about the education, but what are they missing out on?
Yeah, so the data tells us mainly through WIC, Women's and Infant program that we have in the United States that women often use. The data shows us that the initiation rate of breastfeeding, which is defined as if a mom attempts to or try to breastfeed in the hospital. That's called breastfeeding initiation, and I think that the data that you shared at the 76%, mm-hmm. I think that's where that data is coming from. It's really referring to the initiation rate. It's about 70%.
Okay.
And it's about 70%, and for Black women, however, it's about 58% of Black women initiate breastfeeding, and by the time 6 weeks is here and the baby is 6 weeks old, only 38% of mothers are doing any breastfeeding. And by the time the baby is 3 months, only like 6 or 7% of Black women are still breastfeeding at 6 months. So we have disparities for a number of reasons. The clip in the information that you shared about enslavement of Black people,
right.
excuse me, really hindered in so many ways our perception of breastfeeding, our commitment, you know, to breastfeeding. We always took care of our babies. We only knew of breastfeeding, but when the formula companies began to make the supplementation, and the number one group that it went to was Black people. That's who they wanted to buy the formula, not necessarily white women, which is continuing to nurse the white children and give our babies formula. So it really, the introduction of formula, the enslavement of Africans, the industrialization, all of those movements and things that happen impact breastfeeding rates. And so today what we find ourselves is in a situation where we have disparities and inequalities around breastfeeding. Now, we have seen over the last decade, we have seen many, many great advances and positive advances with Black women to breastfeed. So the issue is systemic racist or race policies in the healthcare system. The other issue is workplace lack of support of breastfeeding women, and Black moms, Black and brown moms, tend to work in workplaces that are not supportive of breastfeeding at all. They don't know about the reasonable break time for nursing mothers, which is a federal law that President Obama introduced as part of his health care plan. And it is a federal law today. Not many employees know about it, but it protects the mother's right to pump at work, to breastfeed publicly, and it's clearly outlined what accommodations should mothers be provided. So, you know, going back to work or school is a major challenge for many breastfeeding families. Having access to a physician, to a doctor who promotes breastfeeding could be a challenge as well. And then just the social stigma around breastfeeding is still present in the African-American community. So in addition to that, there's policies and legislation just really that doesn't support Black women, brown women breastfeeding and make, you know, having success at doing that.
You know, why do you think that is? Why would you not want people to have healthy babies and give them the support? I mean, why is there such a significant difference between white and Black? I'm kind of being the devil's advocate and saying that to a degree, but I'm just saying from, you know, because even you have some guys, they have attitudes when they see women breastfeed and so forth. I mean, so are there other psychological things in regards to why, you know, the comfort level that, you know, like being at work, you know, like you said, they want to maybe just pump some milk and put it away for later.
Yeah, I think one of the problems is how we sexualize breasts, right, in this country. And so a lot of women are not comfortable breastfeeding publicly. Many women feel that they may not have good milk production. That could be an issue. The pain, perceived pain of breastfeeding is another piece of the equation where women feel that breastfeeding, they may have had bad breastfeeding experience initially, and so trying again is not even in the question because they had such bad experience and they were not able to be supported and helped to resolve the issue. What I tell my clients is 90% of all breastfeeding issues can be resolved. They just need, you have to reach out to an expert, to a community breastfeeding counselor, or to a lactation consultant, either at your community health center or at to see your health care provider. Mothers should always be asking to see their lactation, to ask if there's somebody who can help them with lactation, and don't give up. If I meet a lot of mothers, like, for example, I meet a lot of mothers who call me and say, I don't feel my baby is getting my breast milk, or breastfeeding hurts, or I've lost a lot of milk supply and my baby is only 6 weeks or 7 weeks old. And so when I come and do an assessment of the baby, the oral assessment, latch assessment, what I find instantly many times is that the baby is tongue-tied. And so if a baby is tongue-tied, oftentimes it's difficult for babies to latch on effectively and efficiently to remove milk from the breast. Mothers have pain if the baby is tongue-tied. And I just found that many of the providers were not diagnosing tongue-tied. And that's very unfortunate. And it's probably because they are not aware, or they don't have the education and information for that infant assessment of tongue tie. But that's usually what I look for first. So there's so many different reasons why we are not having, why Black women in particular are not breastfeeding. Another reason is they're more likely to return back to school and or work before 6 weeks. Some of them are going back in 2 weeks. And so going back, unless you have a very supportive work environment and you have identified the space where you're going to pump your milk and bring your breast pump to work and pump your milk out, and unless you have a very supportive employer, it can be intimidating to ask for time to pump your milk out when you're there for 4 hours, for example, or when you're there, when you only work part-time. But the reasonable break time for nursing, regardless of the hours, if she's part-time or full-time, a mother has a right to pump at work.
You know, I worked many a jobs, and I've seen people just step out and go outside, especially when they said you can't smoke inside, you got to go outside now. And I've seen people do that several times throughout the day, and that's been going on for quite some time. And, so somebody wants to breastfeed versus somebody destroying their body and contaminating other people just if they happen to be up in the area of the smoke, So, that's something. Is there a remedy for babies that are tongue-tied? Is there something that can be done for babies? Medical?
There's a very short and uninvasive surgery that is done by a specialist who just clips that extra skin. It's called a phenotomy that happens when it's very quick. There's a little pain. They usually use, anesthesia to numb that area. But it's a very quick surgery that can be done. And it should be done, by the way, once the mom identifies the provider identifies the tongue tie as an issue.
Is that an expensive surgery? Is that something where maybe people don't want to, you know, or is that a bit very painful for the baby? What are the circumstances there?
Yeah, it's not very painful for the baby, and it's covered by insurance. I've never had a family that I work with tell me that they had to pay for it. So it is covered by insurance. The issue is proper diagnosis, that we need to make sure that the healthcare providers are well educated and informed about potential barriers such as tongue tie, and that in any other impediment or, you know, this physiological situation where the baby just, there could be a number of reasons why the baby is not breastfeeding or the mom is not producing enough milk. For example, some women who just do not have enough breast tissue to produce efficient milk supply for their baby. And so in that situation, your mom can still continue to breastfeed, but she may have to use a supplementation, or she may have to have something attached, like a tube attached to her breast, where the baby can still nurse and through the tubing, the baby is getting either, you know, formula or pasteurized breast milk that the mother has gotten from a milk bank.
Okay.
I don't know a milk bank, though. That I don't know. Milk banks typically reserve pasteurized milk for babies who are very sick in the NICU. I know the staff at the, I think it's called the Southeastern Milk Bank of Wisconsin, or Northern Wisconsin, or Northern Lakes or something like that, but they've been around for quite over a decade, and they are pasteurizing milk for babies in the NICU.
Hmm. Wow. I was wondering, you know, when we talked about breastfeeding, we talked about, you know, we got kind of like of generations of from slavery, you know, where the mothers had to breastfeed their own, I mean, the babies of the white people before they could do their own babies. And I heard people talk about, you know, so they're using our milk. Can we use another person's milk as well, breast milk, if we have problems generating milk?
Oh, absolutely. I personally let milk migrate. Well, just as during enslavement, we were wet nurses, even into the Industrial Revolution and we were paid to rent milk even after slavery, white women with babies. So as long as a woman is lactating, she can nurse other children if they would come to breast. So the key is the babies need to know already how to breastfeed. If you, for example, in the formula crisis situation that we have now, if a woman had a baby and the baby was only given a bottle of formula, that baby does not know how to move from the breast, no matter what, especially if it's an older baby. A baby, I would say, older than 2 months or 3 months, it's going to be impossible to guide that baby to nurse from the breast. So what we can do for women who are lactating, and I'm sure there's women in the United States today who are lactating and pumping extra milk for another mom who's using formula, but she doesn't have formula, so she's pumping milk for the formula-fed baby to put in a bottle. I'll share with you the situation of my niece. So we are a family of breastfeeders.
Okay.
I have three nieces. They all breastfed and breastfed exclusively because of the work that I do and because they saw how easy and convenient it was to do it. And all three of my nieces breastfed their babies from birth, pretty much after between 1 and 2 years old, they weaned. And my niece was, she had, her baby was over 1 year old, and she wanted to go out. She wanted to go out to a party or something, and she bought breast milk in a bottle for the baby, so we ran out. So I didn't have any problem nursing my great niece, and she knew how to come to the breast because she was a breastfed baby. We have to be very, very cautious about sharing milk, because you need to know the person's medical history. You need to know if they're taking any medications that may get into mother's milk. And you just need to be very careful about who you would ask to nurse your baby or where you're getting your milk from.
Wow. Man, that's
we can also
I can understand why a lot of people, you know, if they're not going to do a lot of that work, homework, to check and do these checks and balances to make sure that their kid is okay. And, you know, the way things are, they, you know, like he said, work-wise, you know, you got employers that make you feel bad about breastfeeding. And then, like, the other thing about, you know, and it's also women being over-sexualized, so, you know, that's, seeing them breastfeed creates another issue for some people, you know. So there's,
yes.
I mean, that's just a whole lot for a mother, a woman, to just think about, you know, getting pregnant, you know, and going through those things. When we talked about lack of education, I mean, do we have people in Milwaukee? I mean, like, you said you're the African American Breastfeeding Network. Is there more than just you in the black community doing this type of work? Is there a lot of organizations like yourself?
I'm the only organization, nonprofit, community-based organization that I know of that provides lactation specialists and educational classes on a regular basis. I know that WIC provides education. Their entire staff is well informed, educated about breast milk and breastfeeding. They provide classes. You can come in with your baby if you have problems to get help with. There's prenatal care coordinators who are very experienced and know how to address challenging situations with breastfeeding and know how to get mothers resources and support. Today I went to the Metcalf Park area. I was actually on, I don't know if that's, that might be Metcalf Park or Imani. There was a flower, there was a flower sale on 32nd and Center Street. There was a park. And one of the neighborhood associations was having, I think it's Metcalf Park, was having a flower sale. So I went over there, and there was actually two black women who actually breed, who had breastfeeding experience, and one was breastfeeding publicly and confidently. So there are women, black women are breastfeeding. I don't want people to walk away from this conversation thinking that black women don't breastfeed. Our problem is that we don't tend to reach our goals. We don't breastfeed for longer length of time. The Academy of Pediatrics and all major physicians and doctors recommend breastfeeding from birth up to a year. It used to be 6 months, and now they're saying up to a year. But there's so many barriers and challenges that black women face, and number one is work in school. That's the number one. They're informed, they're educated, they know of a woman who may have breastfed. Last weekend I did two home visits of young women younger than 30. They all had So they knew of somebody who, like, one was a sister, but she referred the mom, her sister, to me, and they both had babies under, like, 6 weeks old. And they were having some breastfeeding latching issues, so I visited them in their home. I believe that we are the only organization that I know of in Milwaukee that does home visits for lactation support, early postpartum home visits. So when the babies are younger than 4 weeks, we go into the homes to help mothers too.
So are we...
I also just, it's important to mention that many, many healthcare providers support breastfeeding. We started 13 years ago, and the number of women, most women tell us now that, unlike 2 years ago, most women tell us now that their providers recommended that they breastfeed the baby. So they are getting positive key messages and important information about breastfeeding from their providers. No one is going to argue that breastfeeding is not the best, right? No one is going to.
No.
It's the best for most moms. Very few moms cannot breastfeed.
Now, are babies generally healthier starting off with breastfeeding for, you know, the period you're talking about? Because is that a more critical time? You said the first year or so?
Oh, yeah.
That most people breastfeed and then they change over?
Yeah. So humans are mammals, and all mammals have, you know, they have breast tissue and are distinctly interested as newborns, as babies, to breastfeed, right? You know, kittens nurse their mom, puppies nurse the dog. So there are benefits in starting at birth. The research shows that when a baby is, first of all, held skin to skin, that means two for the mom and two for the baby, repeatedly and occasionally and regularly starting at birth, as long as the mom and baby are comfortable, we recommend for the first 3 weeks that mom hold their baby skin to skin and hold their baby quite a bit. Regularly throughout the day, the brain is wired totally different than what we say a baby. That is what research shows us. Research shows us that there's proteins that are more easily digested in breast milk, and so the babies, they have less gas, they spit up, they don't have colic. Are you still there? Because I don't hear anything.
You don't hear me right now?
Okay, now I do. Thank you. Also, breast milk contains endorphins, or what endorphins are, chemicals that actually can stop pain. So when a male infant is circumcised, the endorphins can actually stop the circumcision, the pain from the circumcision, and with breastfeeding, too, that comforts the baby. We know that breast milk has many powerful immune-building properties that protects the baby's immune system and builds the immune system for the long haul, for the life of the baby. As I mentioned before, definitely different brain development, better brain enhancement of brain development when babies are nursed. So when mothers ask us, should I nurse my baby or should I pump the milk and put it in the bottle? We recommend nursing for sure.
Okay.
And also, I just want to mention a couple, a few more positive benefits of breastfeeding. One of the main benefits that I think is critical is that we have to remember that mother's milk changes constantly. Formula does not, right? So both during a feeding and day by day, breast milk changes to meet the baby's needs. It always has the right amount of fat, carbohydrates, enzymes, proteins, and other nutrients for full-term and pre-mature babies. So I just want to pause a moment to say that when a mom is breastfeeding at the breast, the first milk the first milk that comes out is called the floor milk.
Mm.
When a baby nurses for the first, like, 7 minutes, 10 minutes, is called floor milk. And the floor milk has all the nutrients and minerals and vitamins that the baby needs. Now, all babies need fat. The breast milk has to have fat in it because the baby needs fat for brain development, for growth and development, and to gain weight. So the floor milk comes out first, and then breast milk changes. As the baby's nursing, as I mentioned before, it changes to floor milk as the baby continues to nurse. That's why we recommend that moms do not stop feeding. When the baby's nursing, let the baby nurse until the baby is completely done, and they'll come off on their own. And so also, let's remember that the first milk that comes out is colostrum. So the first 3 days of mother's milk is like a golden vanilla, and babies love it. It's like a milkshake. It's very thick. It has everything the baby needs, and bodybuilders, unfortunately, I should say unfortunate, but bodybuilders are consuming colostrum through pill form, I hear. But the colostrum is imperative for premature babies and full-term babies.
Wow.
So those are, we know that, I think that the formula cost might go up because of the shortage. And we know that breastfeeding saves the family time and money. Before the crisis, formula for up to, say, a year cost the family between $1,500 and $2,000. So fathers really like the benefits of bonding that they see with mom and baby and the family, as well as saving money for the family. And I can, we were talking to this breastfeeding advocate, a black father who is working in Detroit area in Michigan, and he has come up with a different way that we can promote breastfeeding. And what he identified is that breastfeeding is really about family, and it can enhance a relationship between mother and mother and father. And I agree, because we found in the families that we were working with, dads really appreciate when their partner, their wife, their girlfriend takes out time and care to bond and breastfeed with their babies. And they will do anything to keep that diet intact and that relationship and connection going. That's what we have found in the work that we do.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty impressive, because I was going to ask, what role does the dad play? Plus, minus, I mean, you got to be supportive. I mean, that's the family, the whole situation, I would think. But just the fact that he put that information out there, and that's, that's got to make the woman that's doing the feeding feel pretty good, And like you said.
Yeah. I think education, I think one of the most important roles for fathers is to there is the confirmation that there is a pregnancy. The father of the baby and the mom, one of the first decisions that is made or should be made is how are we going to feed our babies? And that should be a joint conversation, right, between the father and the mother, and seeking out educational opportunities so that they can both learn what is involved with it, because it's very different from formula feeding. Even if a mom is going to pump her milk out and never bring her baby to breast, it requires a different level of commitment, and it's a different form of food that's superior than infant formula. The infant formula companies that I mentioned before can never duplicate mother's milk. Never.
Right.
It's not possible. Mother's milk has living cells.
right? Because it's live food coming directly from the source. So when I breastfeed my baby tonight, and I'm breastfeeding my baby, my food is live, it's active, it's wholesome, it's all natural. It has living cells in it.
That is just so powerful, just hearing you say something like that. I mean, I don't think that way, but, you know, in regards to some of the things that I do, you know, I'm always trying to be as natural as can be as far as the foods that I eat. I don't want to get processed, this, that, and so I'm not complaining so much in regards, but I know the naturalness and how we do things is always better. And so when I hear you say some of these things about, you know, brain development and helping putting on weight and all these other things that occur from, and then like you said, live cells and the breast milk and all, I mean, that's just powerful. And just the thought that people aren't realizing what they're not doing. You know, because maybe if they did know that, they would probably breastfeed. Because it's, some people might not, just because of out of convenience, you know, for whatever reason and stuff like that. But they just don't know the big advantages. You know, like you said, boosting the immune system, all of that. That's just powerful. But just what you're saying that goes on. Wow. I don't know. I've seen others breastfeed when I was a young kid, and I saw that was real common in the family, you know, when someone got pregnant. So it was more common, but I guess things are just a little different now, you know, for whatever reason.
One thing that I changed that I think really impacted breastfeeding rates amongst the Black community that we don't talk a lot about, because it's been happening for years, but it happened within the tobacco to cigarettes and other tobacco products, is the advertising. I wish I had kept this picture, but just this year, I was going to my favorite grocery store, and there at the doorstep of an apartment complex was a box of Deliver formula. So they're delivering, the formula companies deliver at your doorstep. You don't even have to necessarily go out and get it before the shortage. But it's the advertising, the deceptive and disrespectful advertising over the many decades that Black and brown people have been exposed to, that has manipulated them to thinking breast milk is just as good as formula. And on the package, it reads, like breast milk. And that's what the formula companies are putting and manipulating families to think, oh, this is just as good as your milk. Why don't you just use this as convenient? And as you can imagine, my mom is 82. I know in the small town of Mars, Mississippi, the doctor there was telling her, Betty, you got 6 kids. You're going to be so tired. I think you should formula feed. I do not think you should breastfeed. You got so many things to do. I know they told her that.
Right.
And they told millions of mothers that their breast milk is inferior, and therefore they should use formula. So they were blindsided and manipulated.
And so do you think that that's done to boost, like, the manufacturers, you know, like prescribing drugs for people, you know, like they say they prescribe medication for people, or just like if I remember when I was eating a lot of corned beef and some other things, but my cholesterol level was high. And the doctor told me, I'm going to give you a prescription. And And I was like, no, I'll just diet. But we kind of got into an argument because he wanted to give me a prescription, and I knew what I did to make it go up. A friend of mine worked as a butcher, and he gave me tons of corned beef, and I was eating that like every day for almost a month, you know. So when I got a checkup and everything was high, so a lot of times, you know, when you get that information from a medical person, and you don't want to, you know, doubt that, and you know, that just changes things. But before I go further, I think we have Dr. Sullivan. Are you on the line? I know you
yes.
Said you had a short...
Yes, this is Dr. Sullivan. How are you?
Hi. This is Quasi Crab. Thank you for calling in on Warrior's Way. And just your thoughts on, you know, the topic. We're just talking about breastfeeding. And, you know, people had maybe talked about the formula and just all the things that's going on, and the pluses and minuses. Or just your thoughts on, you know, from a medical standpoint, you know, as a doctor, you're a pediatrician.
Yes, I am. I'm a pediatrician, and I agree 100% with the previous speaker. She's absolutely right that the formula, breast milk is superior to any formula because it's perfectly made for babies, just like cow's milk for cows, breast milk for infant, human milk for human infants. So it's the right proportions of the nutrients that are required, and plus the immunological benefits, as well as the psychosocial benefits. It's just the perfect milk and the ideal milk for infants. Exclusively, we recommend up to 6 months, and then certainly to continue with the addition of other solids, you know, after 6 months up to a year. We would like mothers to breastfeed until the infant is about 12 months at least, but definitely for the first 6 months. And it is the superior nutrition for our infants. So I agree with her 100% with all that she said. And also with the shortages that are occurring now, it puts a big burden on families. And so pediatricians are there to help, nurse practitioners, you know, ask your healthcare providers to help with this, and to give culturally sensitive recommendations for alternatives if it's very hard to locate formula. But so right now I do agree 100% with what has been said, and, you know, and I concur, you know, with that, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I got a question actually for both of you, and I guess my question is the trust, you know, based on the information that we're getting, could that be also part of, you know, there's education, and, you know, that Mrs. Blackwell was saying that, you know, we have that education on things, to know all this information that she was pouring out to the universe, as far as, you know, the quality of the natural feeding from breast. I mean, we were made to do that. I mean, women and you know, as animals and so forth, and I mean, that's what's done. But are we, when we're talking about African American women, are we not trusting what's being said? Because, you know, women have went in and for checkups and had things done to them where they got vasectomy or something to that. You know, those things have happened. I remember my wife telling me that, you know, her mother believed that happened to her so a lot of people don't trust when they go in and they talk to physicians and so forth, and they tell them different things. So do you think that plays into why we don't as African American women, as far as the breastfeeding? And I'll go with Ms. Blackwell.
Yeah, I think it's a two-way sword, or they're getting it from both ends. Yes, black bodies have been attacked and experimented on. My mother has Alzheimer's, and my mother was a CNA, a certified nurse assistant. And I thought growing up that my mother trusted the medical provider, trusted the medical system until we began to work with her on her disease. And I don't think it's her disease that's causing her to distrust. I don't think she ever trusted the medical system. So I want to put that out there first. The second is we don't trust our bodies. Most people know that one of the reasons that we have two breasts is for lactation, right? I haven't met one female or one individual that would say, no, that's not the purpose of breast, right? So we know that we can produce mother's milk, but unfortunately, because it's not promoted, because it's not a kitchen conversation, we don't trust our bodies to make milk. I cannot tell you the number of times that women, the first thing that comes to their mind is, will I be able to make enough milk? And that's my experience. It's coming to me from both ends. They don't trust the medical system, and they don't, more importantly, they don't even trust their bodies to make the mother's milk.
Dr. Sullivan?
Well, yes, I agree. But there's something we can do about that. A lot of it is a lack of awareness, a lack of knowledge, and also because people believe a lot of myths and misinformation. I think if moms, as soon as they find out they're pregnant, we recommend that they establish a relationship, make an appointment to see their pediatrician or other healthcare provider as early on in the pregnancy as possible to build that trust, to gain the knowledge that they need to know, because it takes time. Because often, as was said before by Ms. Blackwell, they don't. Young mothers often don't see people in the community breastfeeding like we used to see, and often they don't have mentors or people to tell them, give them knowledge, the knowledge that they need to learn about breastfeeding and prepare for it. So we have to, you know, from day one, when I see a pregnant mother, I start talking about what it means to breastfeed, you know, the anatomy of her body, as was said before, you know, they don't know what, you know, the breasts are for often. You know, they don't know that there's actual human milk, you know, being prepared for the baby and how to avoid some of the problems that start, you know, that kind of discourage moms to breastfeed and how to make sure that they do have enough milk, you know, that they have to feed often on demand, you know, in order to increase their milk supply. So, you know, breast milk works on a supply and demand basis. The more the baby feeds, the more the mom's body makes. So all of that, you know, takes knowledge. It takes time to learn because it's not breastfeeding is an art. You know, it has to be learned. You know, people are not born automatically knowing how to do it. They have to learn how to do it. They have to be taught. You know, just like how you the first time moms have to be taught how to care for a baby and, you know, what to look for, how many wet diapers are needed and, you know, what signs and symptoms to look for if there's any trouble or what to do if the milk supply doesn't come in, you know, as robust as it should. So these are some things where you have to, in order to build trust, it starts early and it takes time. And then a lot of knowledge is needed, you know, to support the family in breastfeeding and any other type of infant care activity.
Okay, well, thank you. I see I have a few callers on the line, and so at this time I'm going to open up the line for calls for questions and comments. And the call-in number is 516-418-5674. That's 516-418-5674. Okay. I have someone at... Let me read this number. Fifteen sixty-nine caller, questions or comments, or are you just listening?
This is Dr. James.
Hey,
and,
Dr. James.
And I am so delighted that you have Ms. Dalbrue Blackwell as your guest from the African American Breastfeeding Network. I'm just so pleased that she's able to make it, as well as Dr. Murda Sullivan, who has long time been an advocate for breastfeeding and helping to make sure that our community understood more of the medical concerns as well as the social concerns. And so you've got a winning team right there for your listeners, and I'm just so pleased to hear them. And thank you, ladies, for being there with Kwazi for the program this evening.
Thank you so much, Dr. James. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. James Carmel.
Wonderful, powerful women. I have another caller at 4295. Questions or comments, or are you just listening? That's 4295. Okay, I'll say just listening. Well, thanks. I'm so glad that, you know, we have you guys here today. And what would you tell the young women to try to motivate them to look into breastfeeding? I mean, why do you think it's such a disparity, a difference between black women? I know you talked about workforce, you know, job-wise and stuff. Employers, you know, they don't allow a lot of things, or they did, but then a bill was passed when Obama was in office to allow them to breastfeed, so they couldn't kind of discriminate against them. But I still kind of would think that it's some kind of pressure or whatever, or I don't know, career-orientated people. I mean, that thing is kind of pushed so much, and so I don't know. Is there a decline in having babies now?
I think that women who have management positions, who are salaried, who have offices, who have employed at larger organizations, tend to be able to have accessibility to lactation rooms and support from supervisors. The women that we really need to be concerned about are women who work in the service industry, women who are teachers, women who have blue-collar jobs, or women who are students. They need the most support. All women need support, but they're less likely to have access to services and feel confident to approach their institutions and their higher institutions and their supervisors to ask for accommodation. My recommendation would be for when we find that when a woman is pregnant is to connect to their local WIC clinics and their local maybe hospitals and even organizations like AABN to find out where they can get education classes. We, for example, when we do educational classes for mothers who are returning back to work in school, we role play with them. How do you approach your supervisor, and what do you say when you're requesting accommodation to use the pump milk when you return. That's very important. And once we role play with them, they feel a lot more comfortable switching their employers. So those are the comments of the day.
And Dr. Sullivan, your thoughts?
Yes, I think the work, as you mentioned, the workplace, we really have to make sure that employers provide the necessary resources for women who are breastfeeding, and also, you know, giving out formula samples and things like that. Anything that can interfere with successful breastfeeding, we really need to make sure we advocate against and promote all resources that really support the breastfeeding family.
I tell you, I'm pretty sure I was breastfed for quite some time. And I had a conversation with a lady at work, and she told me that she breastfed her kid up till 5 years old. Is that an uncommon something that people do?
It's uncommon, but not unheard of. You know, it women many years ago. You know, in developing countries, you know, where breastfeeding was the only form of feeding, you know, and the only source of nutrition for their children. Women did it for years and years, you know, beyond 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, you know, whenever their children had to eat, you know, the only resources they had were what was growing around them and the breast milk.
And also, I agree with that, and also, United States has the lowest breastfeeding rate of all developed and undeveloped countries. The average breastfeeding experience with the mom and baby dyad in the world is 3 to 4 years. Babies and children and infants are exclusively breastfed. It's only in America that we have these inequalities and disparities around breastfeeding. And what you see with that also is youth teen diabetes, right? You see a lot of inactive, overweight children. You may see children with chronic ear infections. You may see so many other health disparities. We know that when mothers breastfeed exclusively and they breastfeed multiple children exclusively, ovarian cancer is at a lower risk. Cervical cancer is at a lower risk. So, yeah, we have a real problem with duration. And I work with women who are very confident and comfortable breastfeeding their baby for 3 years, and they're very confident and confident and breastfeeding an older child in public. I think, in my opinion, as a lactation consultant, one of our most serious barriers right now as a community is that we don't see breastfeeding publicly. When I went to Costa Rica, there were, you know, babies were breastfed all the time of all ages, and that was their norm, and you can tell, right? But here in America, because of the so many issues, so I think, you know, we encourage women to breastfeed publicly to help normalize breastfeeding so that when a baby is older at the breast, it's not a shock. I breastfed my children until they were 3 years old. I had no problems with it because one of the things that we have to make sure the community understands, a three-year-old baby does not nurse like a three-month-old baby or a three-day-old baby. As the baby gets older, as Dr. Sullivan said, supplemental foods are introduced at 6 months. Naturally, your baby is going to reduce their needs to breastfeed as they get older and they
receive supplemental food. So nursing a three-year-old is pretty much nursing one time in the morning for a few minutes if you're at home nursing, and then at night. It's not their only source of food, but it's a way that mom and baby bond. And I loved it. I had no problems with it.
Wow.
And I would like to emphasize that all moms should breastfeed, because it is the ideal form of infant nutrition. Even I always try to encourage moms, even if you just try for a little while. And usually once they try for a little while, they end up continuing much longer than they had anticipated. So I said, just try. And so, because there are very, very few contraindications to breastfeeding. If the mom has HIV or some other type of rare infection, then yes, or hepatitis, yes, you know, if there's no other, and there are other safer alternatives, you know, like formula, then those are very rare contraindications. So in any type of problem that comes up, there's usually it's usually an issue that we can address. Just like Dr. Blackwell is a lactation consultant. The lactation consultants are so valuable for breastfeeding moms. And the nurses that are the maternity nurses, the pediatricians, there are so many people that can help. And they're, the WIC programs promote breastfeeding. So there are so many resources that we can help with, help the moms with, and very, very few, if any, contraindications in this country to breastfeeding. So we encourage it. So many benefits. I mean, it's just beyond comparison.
Okay.
Go ahead, Dr. James. Yeah, I see this as a great opportunity to address something, and I thought about it as I listened to your two guests related to the black infant mortality, where we see a higher rate of death among black babies in the first year of life. And one of the big factors that contributes to those deaths are babies who have been born premature. And I don't think that we have made a good connection to those families whose babies have survived prematurity to go home, and to stress the importance that breastfeeding may have on the survival of those very precious and fragile babies, from the standpoint of not only the nutritional benefits, the immunological support for those babies, but also providing the developmental support of having that level of closeness with that very, very fragile baby who has survived prematurity. And so that's my area of attention. However, we still have moms whose babies deliver early, and the moms and the families really don't realize how fragile those babies are in particular, and that they still, even though they've survived to go home, may not survive to their first birthday. And so I think that this is a setting that I'm glad we have this conversation. Dr. Sullivan, I wish you would speak to, if you would, the impact of premature babies who survive. What happens and what type of pediatric care do those babies typically receive in view of that history of having been born premature?
Well, we certainly recommend breastfeeding for those premature infants. And often they are very too small to do the typical type of breastfeeding where you put mom puts the infant skin to skin, you know, to nurse. So we have other mechanisms that we can help, some very, very tiny premature infants have to be tube-fed and, you know, fed in other types of ways. But we still encourage that the moms give and the nurse, whomever is taking care of the infants while they're in the hospital trying to gain weight and get stronger to go home, that they still be fed breast milk, because again, those nutrients and the composition and the ratio of the nutrients in the breast milk are ideal for those infants. Also, those very small infants run into health problems, like a problem that's called NEC, necrotizing enterocolitis. You know, that's a medical term, but it's like really the bowel becomes necrotic and parts of the tissues are die but breast milk, we encourage breast milk for those infants to prevent those type of problems. And so, and there are other problems too that are much lower, they occur much more infrequently in breastfed infants. And in fact, as Dr. James said, that if we increase the breastfeeding rates in our community, especially in the African American communities where the mortality rates are disproportionately higher, we could dramatically decrease the infant mortality rate if we increase the breastfeeding rates. So it's really vital. It's for the real survival of our infants that we promote breastfeeding. And we promote it for all infants.
And Dr. Sullivan, thank you so much for shedding light on the critical need to breastfeed premature babies. The main stumbling block that I see is that there's not brown and black lactation specialists, even breastfeeding peer counselors, and that work in the NICU. Studies show that when there is unfortunately a sick baby that was born premature and mothers are asked to come to the NICU to pump their milk, it's always encouraging to see someone who looked like you and who may have had similar experiences. I know that other hospitals in the country have black and brown women in who have lactation training who serve in the NICU and who work directly with those moms who have sick babies who were born premature. I do feel that that could possibly help reduce or increase the number of babies who receive mother's milk who are in the NICU. I'm meeting with the providers at Frederick in June in a couple weeks, and that's going to be my main concern, is that how do we integrate into the medical system, into those NICUs, women from the community who are experts in their own right and who could provide that level of social support to women who have sick babies in the NICU.
Wow.
Well, it's interesting that you would bring this topic up, because for many years, and I think there's some improvement in that, Dr. Sullivan can probably address that a little bit better, but this was really an area of the racism which we noted in medicine. You, for many years, you did not see very many black nurses in the neonatal intensive care unit. They were not encouraged to do the neonatal intensive care nurse. It was almost as though it was some exclusivity there, and so it was very difficult for black nurses to get positions there. And yes, it is as in many settings, very encouraging to see among the staff black nurses, even amongst those that are as highly or specially trained for neonatal intensive care unit, but there are black women who certainly are very capable to learn what is required to be in that setting, and that's something that we have to begin to ask, not only ask for, but demand. That we are allowed and encouraged to be in those very specialized areas of medicine. And I like to think that that's getting better. I would hope that it's getting better, but it certainly was for many, many years not the case. Dr. Sullivan?
Yes, well, when I worked at Cook County Hospital, which is now Stroger Hospital of Cook County, and also was the Illinois State Maternal and Child Health Director, we promoted, as Dr. Blackwell had mentioned earlier, breastfeeding peer counselors, and also the training we sought funding and provided funding for nurses, that whether they're as many African American nurses as possible, to train to be lactation counselors, you know, because that's a special training that they have to. It requires many hours of training and expertise. So you have to really. Hospitals and community organizations and other entities have to actively advocate for and promote this, because you know, we just don't have enough personnel in the hospital to assist moms. We have to have other ancillary groups and resources. You know, it's just vital. We have there needs to be helplines. You know, other types of resources. They can get information after hours, and some hospitals. I know the hospital that my daughter delivered in Berkeley, California. They can go to a lactation counselor anytime. You know, they can make an appointment. They're available. Not 24 hours, but at least 8 to 16 hours a day. That is vital, you know, because our moms need support. And, you know, but this type of support and training costs money. And we have to call our senators, our state representatives, our all the women and men. All the policymakers have to be in on this as well. When we were promoting breastfeeding and trying to address infant mortality in our communities in Chicago, we went to the city council members, our aldermen and women, and said, "Look, you know, we have to do something about these disproportionate." Disproportionately high rates of infant mortality in our communities. You know, it's unacceptable. We have to promote breastfeeding. We have to address all other health concerns during pre-pregnancy. We call it preconceptionally, and during pregnancy, and after pregnancy. And we have to continue to do this. And a big part of addressing infant mortality is promoting breastfeeding and providing the resources to do so and improve the breastfeeding rates. And it's really vital for our communities, and our elected officials have to be involved as well as the health professionals and getting money and, you know, philanthropic organizations. We can approach them for funding, you know, to set up community-based programs. But it has to be an ecological approach on all levels of society, you know, not just the hospital, And it has to be on the community level, and it has to be, the government has to be involved. Everyone has to be involved.
Well, how do we get that information out there? Do you guys have special clinics, or how did you receive that information? I'll go with you, Ms. Blackwell. I mean, how's that information passed on? You know, like you said, you're the only in Milwaukee, you said, as far as lactation specialist. How do we let people know how important that is?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question. My phone cut off for a minute. What is the question
okay.
again?
I was saying, how do we let people know how important that is? You know, a lot of the stuff that you were talking about, you know, lactation specialists and so forth, and letting mothers know these things. Also, where do the men come in as being a young parent, new parent and stuff, letting them know these things? You know, be so that they can be a support in those situations.
I'm a strong believer of advocacy, and that I'm a strong believer in that communities can identify their strengths and barriers and how to address an issue. So I think the first start is to ask families at this point, what is it that they need most, and how can we better serve them? Mm-hmm. I know for a fact that families are hearing that breast milk is superior, because when we ask our client, and we serve about 200 to 300 women a year, when we ask them, how did you hear about us, they say that their provider told them about AABN and that their provider told them of the benefits of breastfeeding. So I think what we need right now is to be able to continue to reach out to families and ask what is it that they need most right now, and how can they better access lactation services. One of the things that I do think we need in our community in Milwaukee is we need a billboard, traditional advertising campaign, and we need a campaign that visually shows mothers breastfeeding, like on billboards and on buses. And we also need signage all over the city that says breastfeeding is welcome here. I know that we just printed for our organization, we will be out at as many health fairs and organizations as we can, and fairs and activities in the city this summer. And we purchased a tent because some mothers are just not comfortable breastfeeding in public. So for those who are not, we purchased a tent, and we're going to have a chair in the inside. And outside of the tent, it says breastfeeding is welcome here. So just
okay.
Normalizing it. How can we do that better?
Hello?
Yes, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
You hear me now? Okay.
Yes. Sound like you got cut off for a second.
I got cut off for a second. So I think that's one, is just starting with families and asking them, and then to also begin to make it normalized and be, you know, just be, have a presence, a better presence in the community as well.
Okay. Well, you know, I would like to, you know, support you as much as I can, and I would like to try to keep up with some of the things that you're doing, and just kind of follow you, and if I can, you know, I mean, because it's a family thing. I mean, because, you know, the women get pregnant by, you know, a male, and our young men need to be involved as well to show that support and understanding. And are there classes for men that kind of understand and show how to support their, you know, spouses or girlfriends in these situations?
There's not any classes, and we recently had our team meeting this week. We used to have sessions for fathers and sessions for mothers that was very successful pre-pandemic. So when we had our in-person educational sessions, we would encourage the mothers to invite their male partners.
Okay.
But to emphasize that the class is not only about breastfeeding, because a man is not going to come to a class that solely talks about breastfeeding for a whole hour.
Right.
So we worked with a community leader, Robert Brock, and he was our father peer advocate. We didn't even use breastfeeding in his title because that wasn't the goal. The goal was to bring fathers into a safe setting with the mom, but separate them so that the men can have their talk and the women can have their talk, and then we would bring them back together at the end. And so in the men's sessions, it was very sacred and protected, and they talked about a lot of information. We wanted the father peer advocate, however, had to give key messages before the end of the night about breastfeeding. And so we had to stop that when the pandemic started, so we didn't have the sessions anymore, but we are going back in person as of June 18th is our next session, on the third Saturday, and our first in-person session, and we're working with Fathers Making Progress. They're going to be presenting and creating space for black men to come and just be together and talk about almost anything from, you know, maternal infant health to, you know, voter suppression or gun violence or in addition to breastfeeding. So I think it's important to provide a space for men to come together and just to create an atmosphere of wellness.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's important, that we just need to feel included, you know, in these matters. I mean, we are, but, you know, but just play more of a role. And I think doing that so that other young men see that we're supporting our women and in all shapes and fashion. And, you know, and I think that we just need more of that. I like what you said about advertisement, and I'm just wondering, is there some prejudice or fear about doing things in regards to advertising? Because I'm thinking, okay, breast milk is the best milk. Okay, that looks good. And why don't we see a lot of commercials like that? Because they feel that they're maybe shaming somebody that does formula or something like that. I mean, that's not what we're trying to do. We're just trying to educate people about, you know, the importance of breast milk and saying it like that. And like you said, you wanted to see if we can get a billboard or something like that and try to normalize it. I mean, that all of that sounds good, but I just wonder why that isn't. Or do you know any place where there, you know, that is images
of that? It costs to have the advertising, but also a lot of people push away from public displaying public breastfeeding, unfortunately. And then the second, there are many cities throughout the country that has like pictures and artwork of women breastfeeding all over the world, all over the country. And I believe that WIC one time did hire an artist to draw pictures of women breastfeeding, but I don't know what happened to those pieces.
Okay.
But my organization, we show breastfeeding on our Facebook and social media platforms. We have not yet to do a public campaign, and I would love to do that, but it costs money to do that, to have billboards and bus signs. But as we are experiencing a pandemic, I do think it's important to convey the message that breastfeeding is really a normal way to care for your baby and to provide nutrition.
Is there a number or that people can call to contact you or to donate to the cause? And, you know, how would people be able to reach you?
So on our website, we have a donation page, and our website is aabnetwork.org. And I'll repeat that again. It's AABNETWORK .org.
Okay.
And the phone number for additional information is 414-617-3441. Again, that number is 414-617-3441. People can contact us directly. And also I want to share that it's our time now to put a mark on having public conversations about infant nutrition.
Mm.
And that would include formula and breastfeeding, because formula will never be safe. At any time it can
right.
be pulled from the shelves, right? But mother's milk is always available. It's always
right.
there, even during natural disasters, right? And so what I'm thinking about doing is pulling together a team of concerned citizens and experts in the community. I would love for Dr.
Okay.
Sullivan, I'm not sure if you're in Milwaukee or Chicago area, and Dr. James and yourself to join us in planning a community forum, but having a series of forums for the next year or 2 years to talk about infant nutrition, because we know that it's not, the formula shortage is going to be with us for a long time, in my opinion. And it's very unfortunate, and it's an opportune time to increase awareness about the value and benefits of mother's milk and what are some of the systemic barriers that get in the way of our babies receiving mother's milk from the at birth. So I have been thinking about pulling together a group of people and having our first session in August, because August is National Breastfeeding Awareness Month.
Uh-huh.
And we have, so I'm hoping we can pull together the first session in August, but then have continuous, like every 3 months or every 4 months, have another session that just centers on infant nutrition, both formula, supplemental foods, as well as breastfeeding, because we can't just isolate and say we're going to talk about breastfeeding only, because some mothers are going to do both too.
Okay, I think we lost Dr. Sullivan. I know she had told me she only had maybe about 20 minutes and stuff like that, so I was going to get her to do a closing remark, you know, before she left, but I didn't keep track of that.
She's in Milwaukee.
She's in Chicago.
With Dr. Jane?
Okay.
Yeah, Dr. Sullivan is in Chicago, but she certainly is available to you nationally. And I wanted to mention Brother Quasi asked the question about men's involvement. And you've got a great person there to begin the process of particularly older men who have families, men who have grown children, talking about the importance of the nutrition of babies. I was asking my son why so many men are favoring having boys. And they said, well, a lot of it has to do with sports and wanting to see that their son goes into the sport. And, of course, if you're going to take that route, you need to have a child that is well-nourished, healthy, and developmentally intact. And so fathers can't just leave this all to the mothers to take on that role and that responsibility. And so if you want to see more of these, your sons going to the NBA and the NFL and the like, this is a process that begins, I believe, preconceptually, but certainly during a pregnancy and afterward. What is it that men must do if they are going to have these quality children, and not just leave this to the women to do that?
Mm-hmm.
So what are those things that men can do that can free that mom up if she's breastfeeding? What are some things that men need to be doing and can do so that mom can feel more comfortable in supporting what we've been talking about this evening.
I think you hit it on the nail. I think advocating for preconception education starting at elementary school or before. Another thing men can do is they can attend doctor's appointments with their provider and their pregnant partner and talk about the value and the benefits of breastfeeding. They can also educate themselves and inform themselves by joining different Facebook groups, podcasts. They can contact, you know, their elected officials. There's so many things that fathers can do, but the first, it starts with acknowledging that breast milk is the only way. We have to claim that breast milk is the only way.
Yeah.
And for, especially if a mother cannot breastfeed for any particular reason, we then have to set up places, safe places for express milk for our community, so that women have at their disposal at any time, they have access to either pasteurized mother's milk or unpasteurized mother's milk. Men have a very strong voice in this, Dr. James, and I think it starts with claiming that breast milk is the only way to provide nutrition.
And, you know, I was thinking about, I've heard this, and so if you could just expand on that a little bit. I heard that even women that say they had a baby when they were in their 30s, and they're, you know, and now there's a baby in the house. Maybe their daughter had a baby, and the daughter is sick, and the daughter, or maybe the daughter's just not around anymore. Can the mother, she's, you know, 20 years beyond the time she had a baby, is there something that she can do where she can still produce milk? I've heard that's something that...
From my understanding, any female can lactate, and it's easy for a female that breastfed before in the past.
She can easily
eat. A relactation requires some time. Like for me, I could relactate if I wanted to. What I would have to do is, first of all, have faith and believe that I am going to make milk. And then I would do a lot of hand expression. Almost every 2 to 3 hours, I would do hand expression. And then once I start to see milk production.
Are you there?
Yes, can you hear me? Because I'm going in and out, right?
Yeah, something cut out for a second.
Yeah, my phone is acting strange.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, to answer your question, we can relactate. Yes, it's very possible. And one of the best and efficient ways to do it, if you know of a mom who has a newborn or a baby, you can hold skin to skin to help with hormone, prolactin and oxytocin hormones. Those are the two hormones that need to get a kick start so that you can make milk.
Wow, I tell you, that's got to be something special
it's
for
powerful.
People to know. Yeah, my goodness.
It's powerful.
I mean, just thinking that you haven't done it in umpteen years and your daughter is not around and you know, and what are you going to do? And you don't have the money and you know, so what can you do? And like you said, you can stimulate yourself
you
some kind of way.
Yeah, you can't. You typically cannot make milk instantly. Like,
right,
I stopped
right.
breastfeeding 20 years ago. If my niece dropped her baby off to me today, I could, and her baby is a breastfed baby, what I would do is I would bring the baby to breast, but I would buy a supplementer. A supplementer is a thing, it's a tool that mothers use to keep breastfeeding intact and still give the baby nutrition. So I would probably try to get some breast milk, but in the supplementer there's a tube, there's a container, And the container is where you would put the baby food, or the whether you're using formula or mother's milk, you would put it in the container, and there's a tube that comes from the container. It's attached to your breast and up to your nipple, and the baby will then remove milk from the supplementer. That's
now,
mothers, many, many mothers use that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So
now,
that's what
I
would
probably do. Okay. Well, I recall years ago when I was a little kid, I think I was about 8 or 9, and I was going to get something from one of my aunts because they needed some more milk to do some breastfeeding, and I remember getting pet milk. Does that ring a bell, or is that something that was used? They mixed that with something else or whatever?
I heard, but I don't recommend making formula. I don't recommend it. I don't know what Dr. James feels, but I do not recommend using pet milk to make infant. I hear that it's safer, according to the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine, it's safer to use. Cow's milk is not good either for infants under one. But if you have to choose between cow's milk and pet milk or something you're trying to make, according to the Academy of Pediatrics and Breastfeeding Academy, they would recommend cow's milk over pet milk. Cow's milk is safer. I wouldn't recommend concocting and making your own breast milk. And some mothers are trying that. Now, in my opinion, I do think that at 9 months, as the baby gets closer to a year old, the baby can drink whatever milk whatever the family is using, whether it's soy or almond or what's important is the vitamin D. All human beings, babies, they need vitamin D supplementation, and that's what found in cow's milk, and that is one of the reasons why the pediatricians and doctors push cow's milk for infants is because it has vitamin D. Well, you can supplement your baby with vitamin D and have your baby drink almond milk if you want. Millions of women do that. They don't use cow's milk.
Right. I've heard I've quit drinking regular milk maybe 15, 20 years ago. I'll drink almond milk. That's generally what I'll drink, or I can't think of the other stuff, oat milk. That's pretty much it. So I usually go with something kind of plant-based, but I kind of moved away from that. I just, and one of the reasons is because I see too many different things that I don't understand as far as ingredients that's in there. So that makes me a little paranoid. I don't know what all this is when it talks about ingredients.
I do hear mothers, I have heard, I should say, I don't know the mother, but I have heard of mothers using a nut-based milk instead of supplementation at this time. So if they don't have formula, some mothers are using a nut-based milk for their infants. So I have heard of that.
Well, we are nearing the end of our show, and I was going to get some closing statements. I'm going to just see if Dr. James is here, if he had anything she wanted to add.
I am just delighted that we're having this discussion, and I encourage you and to engage us more in the kinds of things that our community needs to hear.
Yes. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I tell you that. Yeah, that was powerful because I can tell you my eyes were opened on a lot of different things that I just I didn't have any idea of. I just didn't.
Yeah.
And so not knowing what we've been lacking so much and the fact that there are some things I can do to help. You know, it's not just a woman's problem. You bring it up, you know, I mean, it's us. We're a family, you know, and this is what we need to do. So I we got some work to do.
Yes, we do.
Well. Closing thoughts.
Yes. Oh, I'm going to close, but we got work to do. Now is the time to do the work.
to take advantage of this opportunity to teach and to learn and to awareness. So I will be back and talking about a community conversation that we can have for years to come around infant nutrition.
Yes.
That's my commitment.
Okay. Well, I tell you, I love babies. I believe in breast milk is the best milk, and I know as a little kid, or when I was younger and stuff, how I see people breast milk, but as I got older and older and older and been around and in my adulthood, I've seen that less and less. And so that needs to be something that's normalized, and I think that however we can support you and others, this is what I plan to do.
So thank you
for joining us tonight, Dalvery Blackwell, and your association again is the African American Breastfeeding Network, and that's located in the Milwaukee area.
Yes, it is in Milwaukee.
Is it now?
Did
is that,
you hear me?
Yeah, I heard you. Is that
okay?
In downtown Milwaukee, or
no? Our offices are located at All Saints Family Health Center on 24th and Villard. But we serve the entire Milwaukee County area. We do home visits, and we do virtual classes. And our in-person class is at All Saints Family Health Center. And anybody can come, fathers, mothers, sisters, aunts, anyone can come to the class.
Right. All right. Well, I thank you for joining us and making this just pouring into our listeners and myself. This is just wonderful. Thank you, Dr. James, Dr. Sullivan. For all the work that you guys do and that you are going to continue to do, and you've done so much good work and stuff, I would like to be able to support you in any way, shape, or form. And so I will be reaching out to you, and I look forward to having you guys back at different times. And anytime you want to get a message out, my door is open. But again, I'm going to try to look and see what we can do, find some people to set up some billboards.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, thank you guys for joining Warriors Away. We will be back next Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. You are listening to Warriors Away, continuing the fight. And so we will be closing, and thank you guys for joining in, Hotel family. Everybody be well. And my condolences. To the families in Texas and Buffalo, New York. These tragedies are just too much, and it's just so painful just to even think about it. But again, our condolences.
Whoa, easy now.
I'm gonna be free or die.
I've been walking with my face turned to the sun. Weight on my shoulders, a bullet in my gun. Oh, I got eyes in the back of my head, just in case I have to run. I do what I can when I can while I can for my people, while the clouds roll back and the stars fill the night. That's when I'm gonna stand up, take my people with me together.
100 miles to freedom? Would you like to pick a new name to mark your freedom?
Keratum.